As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show, a late night edition of the Total Soccer Show, our first in a while. My name is Taylor Rockwell, here with me to talk about the USA's never in doubt, always secure 3-1 win over the Jamaica national team in the semifinal of the CONCACAF Nations League is Joe Lowry. Hi, Joe. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Taylor. What a super normal, drama-free game of soccer that we just watched. Crazy.
Totally not a game in which I like messaged Joe and then asked him twice before we started recording, how are we going to talk about this game? I am so confused. And on the surface, it's not that confusing. The U.S. gets a very late goal after conceding a very early goal. Tony Miola summed it up very well as we went into extra time. A goal in the first minute and a goal in the last minute that sent us in extra time. Then there's two more goals for the United States. So on the surface, A comfortable win. But when you look at it from the context of going into extra time, going into the very last kick of the game, basically, to get the equalizer against a Jamaica team that were missing many, many starters, many, many key players, this Joe Lowry was not the game that I was expecting, and I'm pretty sure it's not the game that Greg Berhalter and the USMNT were expecting either.
No, I mean, you never game plan to go down 1-0 31 seconds into the game. I mean, it was basically straight off of kickoff. It's kickoff, it's a long ball forward to the right side. Jedi Robinson ends up putting the ball out of bounds. It's a Jamaica throw-in, and like 8 seconds later, the ball is in the back of the U.S.'s own net. And for a Jamaica team that we talked about this in the preview earlier this week, they don't want to play. They want to sit deep. You toss in all of the chaos that is always surrounding Jamaica's federation on both the men's side and the women's side. Leon Bailey is on a podcast out there like throwing bombs at Jamaica, talking about how like he's getting texts about what's going on at 11 p.m. to know what's happening the next day. Like people shoving cameras in his faces because there's no like barriers between them and the outside when he's with Jamaica. And so he's not with this team. Mikel Antonio dips out and he's not with this team either. He was not one of the players we discussed as being absent earlier in the week. Like this Jamaica team is in absolute chaos mode, as it seems like they always are. They don't want to go out there and do anything but defend in a mid block or lower with an occasional bit of high pressure. And we saw that in this game. And play on the break or play for those little set piece moments or second phase set piece moments. And I am kind of chalking the throw in into that category. Like, that's just Jamaica's game. And so when you get scored on 31 seconds in, and we'll talk a bit more about that goal later on, like coming back from that is difficult. And the U.S. made it look difficult, probably more difficult than it was. But then we got just complete drama and chaos with a set piece from Christian Pulisic. Apparently he can take set pieces now and like hit the ball in the box. That's a promising development for the U.S. And then Gio Reyna comes on and does Gio Reyna things, and Haji Wright continues being the clutchest player alive. And the U.S. win 3-1. I don't understand what's so complicated about this. Super normal game.
So we are going to get into a lot of what went wrong for the United States before what went right. We'll also talk about some positives. Joe, you've kind of laid it all out there in a quick summary. And I would just add to that with everything you said about Jamaica. For this U.S. team, my surface level read after at full time and then before going back and watching some stuff was basically that it felt like the U.S. also thought this was going to be a Jamaica team that we're going to sit off, look to just boot long, not really apply any pressure higher up the field, not really try to disrupt their build. And so when Jamaica did, especially after going up 1-0, it felt like at times the U.S. wanted to turn at them and be like, hey, this is what you guys were supposed to do.
Stop
like,
it.
We talked about this. let us not complete lateral passes on our own, please. So that was a very confusing thing. And I think by the time we got to halftime, my hope was that we would see the U.S. come out inspired in the second half, make some changes, fix the things that weren't really working, and have a bit more sharpness to them. And at times they did, and at times they did not. Then they get the equalizer. Then they get two more goals. All is right with the world, unless you are a fan of Jamaica or not a fan of Greg Berhalter or the USMNT. Joe, that is our brief sort of summary of things as an introduction to this game. But if we wanted to start off on a more positive note, what would be your biggest positive takeaway aside from the overall result, the fact that the U.S. advances? Was there any big positive for you? I'm going to assume it involves someone named Gio Reyna.
Yeah, it has to, man. Like, it absolutely has to. I will say, as a quick aside, and you got to it, Taylor, and to be honest, I probably glossed over the fact that the U.S. won this game and will be playing in a final and will have the chance to win back-to-back-to-back CONCACAF Nations League to continue to establish themselves as the dominant force in the region. Like, that is a somewhat big deal. It's not the biggest of deals, and I would generally say the performances are more important than results at basically any level in any tournament, maybe outside of a World Cup. But, like, that is helpful for the United States. It's helpful as they build towards the Copa America this summer. It's helpful as they build towards the World Cup. Being able to face adversity, not that the U.S. faced it especially well for most of this game, but being able to claw back from a deficit and getting punched in the mouth and eventually finding your footing, those are sort of intangible things, which is not usually my wheelhouse, but I do think there is some value in all that stuff. So I'm glad, Joe, you mentioned that, even as an aside.
My pleasure. I'll just say the U.S. glossed over the first 95 minutes of this game. You can be forgiven for glossing over that little detail there. Now, shall we talk about Gio Reyna for a moment?
Yeah, it's not often that Taylor has to prompt me with Gio Reyna twice before I wax poetic.
I was just trying to jump in before you launched into Gio Reyna because I had a feeling that
we were never coming back
to that one. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
100%. Gio Reyna comes on at halftime in this game and, like, changes a whole bunch of stuff for the United States. He comes on for his friend, Joe Scally, who started it right back for the suspended Serginho Dest, shifting Weston McKennie to right back, which I thought was an interesting move. It felt like we were back watching Schalke with Weston McKennie at right back and Haji Wright playing soccer. Lots of weird throwback moments there. But Gio Reyna comes on the field, and he was not perfect. Yeah, it's super weird. He was not perfect, and Gio Reyna is never perfect when he's on the field. He is lackadaisical with his movement. His body language is almost always poor. And yet he is still the only American player that is currently with the United States men's national team who can do the kind of stuff that the U.S. needs to do to break down a low block. His vision, his passing, not just on the two assists, although those were both lovely moments. The first one is an outside of the foot through ball, finds Haji Wright. Haji Wright takes care of business. Reyna is the only player in the U.S. pool providing those kinds of passes. But it wasn't just the assists. Like, the signs were there before this all started happening. 50th minute. Gio Reyna gets on the ball and just overhits a slipped pass to Malik Tillman. And then he has a number of other 60th minute, a good pass to Florin Balogun, 65th minute, good pass to Haji Wright, 66th minute, another good ball to Haji Wright, and then you get the assists. He was active. He was involved. And the U.S., at this point, Taylor, they have a Gio Reyna problem, but Gio Reyna isn't the problem. The problem is how much they need Gio Reyna to look competent and comfortable in the final third against a low block. You know, it's great when he's on the field, and it really was a lot of good stuff when Gio Reyna had the ball at his feet. But to drag us back down again, the problem is when Gio Reyna is not on the field, and let's not forget, he's not on the field because he's not been playing for Nottingham Forest. There's been talk about maybe he had a little bit of an injury that was keeping him out of lineups there, but even when he was healthy, he wasn't really in that lineup. So, like, it is a legitimate problem for the U.S., but still on the evening, the good way, way outweighed the bad for Gio Reyna, as it basically always does for the U.S. men's national team.
I think an interesting wrinkle for me was that Musa oftentimes was the deepest of the midfield three, which was occasionally quite a big problem. But there were also times when it did look to me more like a sort of conventional 4-2-3-1 with Malik Tillman as the sort of central number 10, basically. And that feels to me very much like a spot that is carved out for Gio Reyna when he is fully fit and able to start. And I think it should be. Joe, I had sort of moved into the territory of, I'm not sure this is ever going to fully work out for Gio Reyna? Like, the Nottingham Forest loan has gone poorly, as you mentioned, and it just doesn't feel like he is going to end up staying there. It feels like he'll go back to Dortmund, and maybe they will sell him on. Maybe they'll try to reintegrate him. That feels unlikely. But it started to feel a little bit to me like, is this going to be potential wasted? Is this going to be another what-could-have-been moment? And maybe it still will be, but tonight was a very strong reminder for me of just how important Gio Reyna can be to this team and just how big of a difference maker he can be. For the reasons you've already outlined, and as you also correctly pointed out, there are drawbacks. There are moments in extra time. Twice, I think, he just sort of casually jogs with the person he's supposed to be marking, who then gets a good 10 or 15 yards in front of him. At one point, one of the players ends up getting a shot off, and he just sort of meekly is like, "That was me. I didn't mark him. Sorry about that." But for those moments, there are all the things that we've come to expect from him, including that beautiful assist, including the great pass to Haji Wright for the third goal, which Haji Wright ends up making work. But there's also him getting stuck in, and he wins 50-50s. He wins a 50-50 to set up that third goal. He picks up the loose ball after Pulisic goes down to set up the go-ahead goal. And along the way, he's going into challenges. He's not backing down. And for a player who, as you said, was rumored to be injured, it did not look that way tonight. It did not look like he was managing minutes, managing fitness. It looked like a player who was up for it and trying to make things happen. And also, critically for me, a person who is routinely frustrated by that body language you mentioned, I didn't see a ton of that. I didn't see a ton of obvious frustration, especially as the game goes on. And that can be so toxic, so just negative to squad morale when there's one player who's just like, "Oh, this is bad. This is bad. You didn't do that. This sucks." And I didn't see that from him. He felt like a player who kept things going, who kept that engine going, and ended up making a difference. So I come away from this game, if nothing else, feeling very happy about Gio Reyna wearing a U.S. jersey.
I just hope that this performance, and really, this should have happened before, but I hope that this performance for the larger U.S. men's national team fan base puts to rest any of the discussion about Gio Reyna not starting for this team. And he didn't start in this game, by the way. It was Malik Tillman. And I can understand Greg Berhalter rewarding Tillman for his performances with PSV. He's been playing in the Champions League. Gio Reyna hasn't been playing in any league. So I understand that. But Gio Reyna, like, his performances with the national team have not dipped, regardless of whether he's in a lineup at club level or not. Like, it just does not matter for Gio Reyna. He should be in the lineup. The only thing that should stop him from playing real minutes for the U.S. every single time he can is fitness. Like, the only reason he shouldn't be playing is if he can't play. That is the only, at this point, that is genuinely the only acceptable reason for Gio Reyna not to be on the field for the U.S. men's national team. The problem is, he's not fit a lot and, like, doesn't really play, and injuries have been a huge part of that throughout his young career. So that is a major problem. And that's part of this whole, you know, the U.S. has a Gio Reyna problem. It's not Gio Reyna. It's his fitness. It's the fact that they need him so much. It's all those things. But tonight against Jamaica, he was truly excellent. Can I toss in one more positive, Taylor, before we maybe get into some of the negative stuff? It was awesome to see Tyler Adams back on the field.
Yeah.
Like, he's on the field for 30 seconds and he's like pointing at people and gesturing at people and like marshaling the center backs and doing all of the field general stuff that Tyler Adams does.
Shoving Cephas off the field when he had the audacity to like only sort of jog walk off the pitch when he subs off. I enjoyed Adams just immediately getting into it. The fight is there, Joe. The fight is there.
It never left. It's been 400 plus days since we've seen Tyler Adams play for the U.S. men's national team. He has not played since the U.S.'s round of 16 loss against the Netherlands at the 2022 World Cup, which feels like an eternity ago. And I'm sure it felt like an eternity ago to Tyler Adams, who was angry when Greg Berhalter subbed him off. So Adams
was
comes
he?
On.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I know. He hit it very well. And you definitely couldn't read his lips and see anything along those lines. He was heated at that, and he wants to be on the field. And he and Berhalter worked it all out, and I think he understands that he is on a minutes restriction. He knew that ahead of the game. Berhalter said that to the press. Everybody, including Bournemouth, was acutely aware of that fact. But it was great to see Adams back on the field, and the level legitimately raised when he was the one setting the tempo in possession instead of Yunus Musah.
I got to say, for a minute there, I was torn. Because when he comes off, Adams, and is clearly really annoyed, says, we'll keep this G-rated, we'll just say, that's effing BS, I believe is what I saw him say, amongst other things. And he's frustrated because it's minutes being managed, it's an agreement with Bournemouth. I think Tony Mueller in the commentary joked that like they should have just like taken the phone off the hook or something like that.
Oh, sorry, Bournemouth, I'm not our bad. We didn't get your call.
New phone, who this? But when that happens, as angry as Adams looks, they cut back to play, then they cut back, and he's not even sitting on the bench. He's sitting on the grass away from the bench, clearly still heated. And on the one hand, I really love the competitiveness of the not wanting to come off. But at the same time, you have to understand in that moment why you're being subbed off. And it felt a little uncharacteristic to me to see him sort of go off on Greg Berhalter like that. Not trying to defend Greg Berhalter in that moment, just saying, like, you know the cameras are going to be on you. You know that's probably going to be a talking point. I really enjoyed that the production, the director, whomever it was, shows us that interaction again and shows it to us a little bit slower. And the thing that then stood out to me is that Berhalter kind of holds him up, as you could see in the broadcast, then puts an arm around him. And we've seen this time and time again with players who are really frustrated. They'll shake the arm off. They'll kind of push him away. And I appreciate that Adams has this sort of ability, the presence of mind to be frustrated, but also to recognize, like, let's not make this personal. I can be annoyed. And so I thought it ended up to me being a very positive sign of how competitive he is, how much of a competitor Tyler Adams is, that he doesn't want to come off in that moment, regardless of the scenario, regardless of the situation, regardless of how long he's been out. It makes me feel very good about drafting him today, Joe. That's all I'm saying.
Even if the Discord doesn't see the value in that, Taylor, I do. And I want you to know that.
What do they know? What do those Discord people know? But yeah, Joe, I love seeing Tyler Adams back. I wouldn't say he had a massive on-field impact. Would you disagree with that? Like, maybe that's just because I wasn't paying as much attention to him as I was fully panicking in the final 10 to 15 minutes. But for me, there was a little bit of, like, it's great to have him there. He's certainly doing some things. Please score a goal. Someone please score a goal.
Yep. I think that is the TLDR. He was, he raised the level, but I don't think he was the deciding factor. Like, that absolutely was Gio Reyna. It was Haji Wright. Haji Wright apparently was, like, at the airport, headed to Dubai for a vacation during this international break, when he gets the call to be an injury replacement because Josh Sargent and Luca De La Torre both end up missing this camp, though they were on the original roster due to injury. Berhalter calls Haji Wright, or whoever it is, calls him, and Haji doesn't go to Dubai and instead comes to Texas to play at AT&T Stadium. Crazy scenes for Haji Wright. Like, those guys were the difference makers, but Adams, to me, the difference in the tempo and just the sure-handedness that he has at the base of midfield, especially compared to Yunus Musa, who is a young player that I like, but for me, along with Joe Scally, like, it was those two players that turned this game into a quicksand game for the U.S. There were plenty of other players who did not cover themselves in glory, and we'll get to that, but Musa was just so incredibly poor that maybe anybody would have felt like an upgrade, but Adams in particular, for how he moves and how confident he looks there, it just felt like it was a huge boost in that way.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the lineups, we'll talk about the opening approach, we'll talk about what went wrong, and then maybe a few more positives to close things out. Back soon.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back. All right, Joe. We started mostly positive, talking about Reyna, talking about Adams returning, and then you let us in nicely by mentioning Scally and Musa there at the end. Let's talk the lineup for a moment, and maybe we can then transition into talking about what we made of that lineup and the decisions therein. I wouldn't say it was a fully surprising one. It was the 4-3-3 we've come to expect with different variations along the way. Matt Turner in goal, Jedi Robinson at left back, Miles Robinson and Chris Richards as your two center backs, Joe Scally deputizing for Serginho Dest, who was suspended. We kind of expected that to be the case. Up front, it was Pulisic, it was Balogun, it was Weah. That was what we expected. The midfield is where we got a few variations. We assumed Tyler Adams would not be starting. But Joe, I think when last we spoke, did we have Johnny starting? Is that what we thought might be the case?
I think we thought. I believe we had Johnny Cardoso as a starter. It came out before this game that he'd had some sort of injury scare in Spain. And so Greg Berhalter said, I think maybe it was yesterday or sometime recently, had to pass this sort of last-minute fitness test. And so from the moment that news started coming out, it was very clear that he wasn't likely to start either. Now, we do see Johnny Cardoso. He comes on for Tyler Adams, who came on for Yunus Musa in the 100th minute. But at that point, Berhalter didn't have a lot of other options. If Adams can't go and he couldn't from the start, and if Cardoso can't go and it doesn't seem like he could from the start, then you kind of are just left with Yunus Musa.
Yeah. I think we had it as Johnny, McKennie, and Reyna, thinking that maybe it wasn't Tillman yet. So when it is Tillman, I was surprised by that. And I'm going to say also a little bit apprehensive, because we've talked about his performances with PSV in the Champions League review shows, and I have been largely unimpressed. I think it's amazing that he's starting in the Champions League. I think it's amazing that he is getting so many opportunities. It still feels like a player who doesn't have the polish that we would like to see, certainly to play in knockout rounds of the Champions League. And I think we saw that today. I feel like we saw looseness in the dribble. Even when he would sort of get out of something or have a nice little moment of skill, there was then that one extra step, that one extra touch, that one extra move that doesn't come off or leads to a being dispossessed or miscontrol or an errant pass. And it just felt like he's another player. I think I texted you this, that I put him into the Zendejas category of a player that right now I sort of feel like we know what he's going to be. We know what we're going to get out of him. So maybe there are other players I wouldn't mind seeing in that midfield, at least as starters for the foreseeable future.
The problem is, even though I generally agree with that, like, who are those players? You know, especially tonight when you're not going to get Cardoso, you're not going to get Adams. Gio Reyna, even though we both wanted him to start, it's understandable why he didn't, right? I mean, I would assume fitness is still a legitimate concern for him at this point. And so the fact that we don't get Gio Reyna until the second half kind of makes sense. I just don't know who else you're going to put in that spot. Brendan Aaronson, you know, if we know stuff about Malik Tillman, I think we still have a bit more to learn about him. Like, then we certainly know what Brendan Aaronson brings. Like, I just don't really know what Berhalter was supposed to do.
Composure,
incredible hair, locks flowing, everything, intensity. I didn't think Aaronson was bad in this game, by the way. I know I'm not often his biggest fan.
I thought he was. I would agree with you. I think he was exactly what you and I both expect Brendan Aaronson to be. I just tend to think of that more positively than you do.
Yes, 100%.
But there were, again, moments tonight when I was just like, I don't know if dribbling straight into that guy, shoving him backwards, and then somehow keeping the ball is what I was looking for in that moment. But also, I guess you kept the ball, so that's positive.
Yeah, it's wild that Brendan Aaronson is the eldest sibling in his family, because he definitely gives off younger sibling vibes just in general, like out there causing chaos. What I will say is I thought the lineup, I had no complaints with the lineup. Like, the thing I tweeted out when I saw this 11 was, oh, I'm curious to see how Yunus Musa does as the number six in this game. Can he add pass? Like, people can go check the receipts. This is a real thing. Mm-hmm. Like, can he add passing to his ability to progress the ball? And the answer was no. Like, the U.S. in general, when they go down in the first minute, it is Joe Scally who ends up getting posterized at the back post. There are other issues there that, Taylor, you spotted, and so I'll let you dive into some of those things. But as the U.S. try to make their way back, really, even though the game plan changed, in a sense, it kind of didn't change at all for the U.S. because either way, you needed a goal against Jamaica. I mean, I guess if you're playing for penalties, like, you could coast 0-0 for 120 minutes, but that was never going to be the reality for the U.S. Like, they needed to score a goal. Either way, you go down 1-0, okay, you still need to score a goal. So in that way, the goal was exactly the same for the United States men's national team. And Yunus Musa, along with the center backs, those are the players being tasked with serving as the foundation to this possession shape, which really was a 4-3-3. It was fluid, it was flexible. Tim Weah and Joe Scally would at times rotate through different vertical positions. McKennie might drop a little bit wider on the left side in the first half. You'd have Jedi Robinson at times tucking inside so Pulisic could have the wing. But it wasn't anything mind-blowing. It wasn't anything we really hadn't seen before from the U.S. It was a 4-3-3 with some fluidity, Tillman maybe sometimes a bit more central, all that stuff, right? Like, there was nothing crazy about the tactical approach. It was, in some ways, the execution that completely derailed this game. Musa, along with Robinson and Richards, Richards was probably the best of those three at building from the back. But even Richards, like, he was sloppy. Some of his passes, I like let out a gasp.
You know, the one that made me mad, right?
Shoot, which one was it?
The one where he tries to pass to Miles Robinson and almost passes it out of bounds.
Yes.
That's the one where I genuinely threw my pen at that point. It was just like, we can't complete a 10-yard lateral pass with no pressure. Like, there wasn't any pressure. It wasn't even like one of those times when Jamaica sprinted forward and he kind of panicked. It was just a casual, like, I'm just going to play this one off to the side and then check away 5 yards. And it almost goes out of bounds. I don't know what was happening.
Yeah. It was one in the 64th minute for Richards for me. Tyler Adams is on the field. He's the one kind of marshaling stuff around. And Richards, it's like 6 yards between them. And Richards just plays it to his wrong foot. Like, he plays it to the back foot when he should play it to the front foot. I almost couldn't believe my eyes. Like, the U.S. is chasing a goal. They've gone 64 minutes at that point without scoring and being a goal down. And they have done very little outside of the occasional Gio Reyna moment of brilliance and a bit of good play from Tim Weah. And in some positive moments, maybe we'll get to those, maybe we won't. They weren't especially notable, to be honest. Like, this is the kind of passing performance that we're seeing from the U.S. is like these wrong-footed, simple passes that you learn when you're like a U-12 player to pass it to the right foot. Those are the things that make professionals professionals, is that they get those details right. And whether it was Richards or Robinson, who was in this lineup for his defensive ability and gets dusted by Cephas in the 20th minute as he cuts into the box over and over and over again, like, it just wasn't good enough. Like, there's no way to turn this around. Yes, the result was great for the U.S. There were lovely moments as the game wore on. The possession play was truly awful, at least in their own third. And in Jamaica, to be honest, were so poor that the U.S. still had a few looks and had good chances, even if they didn't always lead to a final shot. There were a few of those throughout the game. But like, the U.S. did not put themselves in a position to succeed in this game. And it did feel like, even though they had 80-something percent possession in the first half and 70-something percent possession in the second half, they dominated this game, and Jamaica had very, very little to show for it in the grand scheme of things after 31 seconds. But man, it was not an encouraging U.S. performance tonight.
Not at all. And you mentioned those stats, Joe. I think maybe those aren't a good example, but there were some examples of where stats do lie or maybe don't give you the full picture. Because with Yunus Musa, if you check his numbers, 58 of 67 passing for an 87% pass completion percentage, 3 of 4 successful dribbles, 5 for 7 long balls. And yet I don't understand those numbers because he gave the ball away, I want to say 4 times in the first 20 minutes or so. Pretty needlessly, he has a few miscontrols that then concede possession. And that in and of itself isn't a huge problem, except that in this game, when he is the deepest midfielder, you cannot do that. Yeah. You cannot concede the ball or concede possession when you are out of position, when you're further up the pitch. But you also cannot give the ball away when the team is transitioning to attack and now everybody is out of position. And that, to me, was sort of the story of the game for the U.S., like Yunus Musa, a good representation of that, I guess, that basically it felt like he tried to play direct passes or passes into feet really quickly when maybe an extra touch, an extra second of processing would have helped. And then at times was too slow to play the ball, held onto it too long, or ended up just dumping it off, which is probably where some of those passing numbers came from. And so this, in the end, for pretty much the entirety of this game, felt like it was the United States who had just sort of been cobbled together last minute instead of Jamaica. It felt like it was the U.S. that was just off. And I said this recently, I forget about what game, but it's a thing that I'm unaccustomed to seeing from the U.S. generally speaking, which is that they were basically too fast and too slow simultaneously. And thus the rhythm is off. You don't have the connectivity. Sometimes this player is going to take 6 touches and try to dribble. Sometimes they're going to play a ball first time. And it felt like no one was then able to know for sure if it was going to be a first time pass or a 6-touch dribble or a longer dribble than that. And so it ended up being very much reacting to the player on the ball at times, much more so than we are building through patterns. We are building through rotations and movement. We will then open up the defense to find opportunities. Joe, you've talked at many different times in many different ways about how difficult it can be to break down a low block. Not even that Jamaica were always in a low block, but they would get numbers back. It would be difficult, but it didn't feel like the United States made Jamaica's life difficult for almost the entirety of this game.
Yeah, the good moments for me were mostly coming on that right side with Tim Weah, who always has this sort of an invention to his game. He missed Sergiño Dest, I think, on that right side. Dest suspended after punting the ball to a different island, I think, in the Caribbean back in November. You could see Weah miss somebody to combine with, and to the point where he went looking on the other side of the field and would freelance a bit on the left to go and find Christian Pulisic. And I thought there were some nice moments there.
That?
Yeah, please.
You mentioned that. The commentary team talked about how that is a thing that we know Weah is going to do. He's clearly been given license to roam and show up on the other side to create overloads. Joe's shaking his head. That was one perspective. At halftime, Jesse Marsh was basically saying to him that was a sign that Weah was just sort of trying to make things happen, roaming around, not staying where he was supposed to. And so in a way was basically saying he was going against the system. I don't know if you would go that far with it, Joe, but are you basically saying that you felt like that was Weah just sort of trying to make things happen as opposed to a thing that they had deliberately wanted him to do?
I'd go with Marsh on that one. I'm fine with saying like he kind of goes against the system. I think in a perfect world, the ball movement and the tempo and the timing of the off-ball movement as well was so sharp that you have numerical advantages everywhere. Like that's the whole positional play idea. That's what you want to try to do when you have to break down a low block. The U.S. just couldn't find any of those things for the vast majority of this game. And so Weah goes freelancing. Like he goes looking for opportunities to create or someone to feed him or whatever it is. And that didn't really ever fully pan out. But man, in general, the U.S., and this continues to be a theme, right? And you can talk about the field. You can talk about the fact that there were like 12 people in the stands for a home game for the U.S. in a continental tournament, which is really a big bummer. Like you can make excuses. And I think some of them are valid. And I even think about the fact that Yunus Musa is sort of drafted into being the number six after he didn't look comfortable doing it in the fall. And he's back in that role now because the other guys that you probably rather do that job weren't available to go 90 minutes. Like all those things are probably fair, but they don't really make me feel any better. And I don't think they should make Greg Berhalter feel much better, given that the U.S. have just struggled so much with looking dangerous when they have the ball against a team that is giving them the ball. Like that has been a problem for the United States for a long time. Now, probably the biggest silver lining is that's a hard thing for everyone. Like every team in the world struggles to break down a low block. I said this 100 times before. Man City have like 3 or 4 nil-nil draws in a season or like 1-0 losses in a season where they just can't break through or they have chances and they don't find the back of the net, whatever it is. That is a common problem. It feels more common for the United States than it does for like the best in the world, frankly. And that's probably because it is. Like this U.S. group, you think about, you know, it wasn't just Musa in the center backs. It was Joe Scally with sloppy passes from his right back spot. He comes off at halftime. It was Jedi Robinson, who I didn't think was particularly sharp on the evening. It was Malik Tillman, who still doesn't look like a player who is really ready to influence high-level games. Weston McKennie is not always somebody who is able to pull the strings, even though I think he is a useful string puller for the U.S. Christian Pulisic is very much, I think, at his best when he's wider. And Tim Weah is like a pass before the pass guy. He's going to help create moments to then take advantage of if you're the U.S., but he's not a creative, super creative, like final pass or final shot guy either. And Balogun still hasn't quite bedded in with this team, maybe because he's only played one full 90-minute stretch with Gio Reyna ever. But like that's a concern. All those things are concerns, and they should concern the U.S. They should have concerned them before this game, and they are still very real problems after this win.
Two things there, Joe. The first would be if I wanted to give Yunus Musa just a little bit of credit or maybe just like give some context, it is worth noting he is an observant Muslim. He had not broken his fast yet because it is Ramadan. So I think at time of kickoff, he hasn't eaten or I believe had any water. I forget if that's allowed or not.
It's not.
There you go. So I think that could explain partially why maybe he wasn't fully up to speed there. The second thing, though, to go to your point about the problems that we were seeing or the problems with this team, as we head into our second break, let me ask you this, Joe. Is it a problem that some of these problems are still problems? I'm going to use problems 3 times in one sentence. At this point, we're into the second cycle. I don't think, short of things going catastrophically wrong at Copa America, don't think Greg Berhalter is anywhere close to a hot seat, even if they lost this game. I think it gets explained away. I think it's not that big of a deal, according to U.S. Soccer, at least. But I don't fully disagree with that, at least in this performance. But I do have some concerns with the idea that there are still, like, individual performers who want to do things that maybe aren't being put into their best positions.
Sure.
Individual performers that aren't shining the way we expect them to. There are still obvious gaps in how this team needs to play or wants to play stylistically that aren't really being filled. It does feel like there are still holes there that aren't yet being filled, aren't yet being plugged, aren't yet being solved, however you want to put it. And it does have me more concerned than I think I've been in quite some time.
Yeah, I don't have enough to dissuade you from that concern, Taylor. I don't know that it would be right to dissuade you from that concern. Where I would start with this is I think a lot of people tend to, when they watch soccer, to see a team perform badly and put blame on the manager. And there are lots of moments where it is fair to put blame on a manager for a poor performance. I think that is a part of the game. Generally speaking, I think the most fair place to start when a team performs poorly is with the players that are performing poorly, because they're the ones who are kicking the ball. And the U.S. in this game, like, they were dreadful with their possession play. They were really poor doing the basic professional soccer player stuff. And I don't know exactly how to chalk Yunus Musah not being able to complete a pass up to Greg Berhalter's failure. So I think that is a very real part of this. At the same time, it is unfortunate, and I think there probably is some blame that goes Greg Berhalter's way, that the U.S. doesn't look a little more comfortable when they have the ball. I don't think it's reasonable to expect them to look like Manchester City. Let me rephrase that. It is absolutely unreasonable to expect them to look like Manchester City or Spain or Germany or any of these teams that have players who are all playing for elite clubs and playing big roles for those clubs. Like, that is an indicator of talent, and the U.S. is just not there yet. And maybe they will never get there. Maybe they will sometime after we're both long gone, Taylor. Who knows, right? Like, that is a big issue for this U.S. team. A bigger issue, frankly, the player quality, than any of the tactical stuff. But, it's not the most encouraging thing, to the point where the thought did cross my mind of, does this U.S. team just kind of need a shakeup? Like, do they need a little bit of a new voice? Do they need something to change? And it's hard to justify that thought, to be fair, when you've got Yunus Musah over here telling Michele Giannone, who was doing a great job on the Eurovision broadcast tonight, by the way. Like, when you've got Yunus telling Michele, like, we love Greg Berhalter. Like, we love playing for Greg because he loves us. And, like, there is very clearly a bond with big players and Greg Berhalter. And I don't know that it's a good idea to disrupt that bond. So it kind of just leads to this big pile of mush where, is the tactical approach perfect? No, probably not. Are the players performing well? Definitely not in tonight's case. And do you feel great about the U.S. men's national team moving forward when Gio Reyna is not on the team at least? No, like not at all. And that is, I think, kind of just the state of the men's national team right now.
I think that's well said, Joe. You know, we're fond of the things can be two things phrasing on this show. And I think this game was pretty much the embodiment of that it was a good result in terms of the U.S. winning and advancing, and also a bad result in the way we got here. It was some good individual performances and then some really bad individual performances. And I think all of that leads to this can be, I am of the opinion that this is the deepest, most talented the pool has ever been. I think I also tend to think that that means naturally that the team is better, that they will gel more, that they have more depth and more areas, more ability to figure things out. And I think sometimes I forget how much work has to go into making those parts fit, and how much you have to figure out how to get those players to play together and have a clear understanding of what each other want to do and how they want to play, and then how you can evolve that or adapt that when you go 1-0 down inside the first minute, or when things are getting really sketchy and you have 15 minutes to find something. And so I think it's another things can be two things. This can be the deepest, most talented the U.S. has been, but there can still be, not, I wouldn't even say huge problems, just enough problems, enough holes, enough gaps, enough whatever, that it still becomes a concern for how this team moves forward. So I'm with you, Joe, that there is just that inkling in my mind that, like, maybe another voice could shake things up, could freshen things up. Simultaneously, maybe this is some rust. Maybe this is the U.S. just needing to get a game out of their system. Maybe it's a wake-up call they needed. So it's an interesting point then, in my mind at least, that there are more issues than I think I wanted to see. Simultaneously, seeing the issues sort of makes me feel better, because at least, I think I'm going to use a tautology here, at least now I know what I don't know instead of not knowing what I don't know.
Yes, I tracked with all of that.
Should we take a break while you process that one?
Yeah, maybe let's do that. Let's do that, Taylor.
Okay. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics, and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode. Welcome back. I've given Joe time to clear his head from my ramblings, which makes sense to me, maybe less so to him. But I think where I come away to finish up that point is just that I'm happy that I understand the limitations of this squad a little bit more, so then can have better expectations for how they can improve going forward. And then when they do, maybe then I will get back to my feeling of like, we got this. We're going to win the World Cup in 2026. But Joe, to bring the Berhalter conversation to a close, I think if you're comfortable with that, is it a fair summary to say that we are not putting the poor performance fully on him? Simultaneously, I'm not sure if I'm giving him much credit for the overall win.
Yes, I think that is completely fair. Like, if we're putting the blame, at least largely on the players for their poor performance, like, it doesn't take a genius to sub Giorena onto the field at halftime. Like, like that is just the obvious move when the U.S. is struggling to create anything in the final third. So, yeah, I don't think Greg Berhalter deserves a ton of credit for that switch. I do like the idea of getting Joe Scally off the field. Like, that was a clear, identifiable problem. Sorry, it hurts to do that to a fellow Joe.
Yeah.
I don't have the Graham radar that Graham has for fellow Grahams. I don't have that, so I don't feel quite the same loyalty.
Yeah, and I know you're making a joke there, which I do appreciate. I do appreciate that you don't have the Graham bias or the Graham call. But Joe Scally is a player that you, Joe, have been lukewarm on, and I think fairly, especially
tepid
after
is
this
maybe
performance.
The word I would use. Yeah,
what'd you say?
Tepid is maybe the water tepid, temperature yes. adjective I would use.
I think your line on him was, Joe Scally is solid at best, I think, is what you said of him when we were previewing this game. And that's...
For me, that's a devastating burn, to be honest.
I mean, It was interesting because I think he's another player. Maybe he is the perfect representation of what I was talking about earlier. A player that I was like, if we don't have Dest, Joe Scally is like not as good attacking wise. Maybe he's a little bit better defensively. So I think mostly can like do the job and you won't see a noticeable drop off. I do not feel that way anymore, Joe, especially after that substitution. But I think you see him give the ball away. You see him concede a few fouls. He ends up getting the yellow card pretty early. He obviously plays a role in the goal, which I do still want to get to in a bit more detail. But also, I think at times just looked sort of lost, looked a little confused as to where he was supposed to be. The goal afterwards, when he just looks around like, I don't know, did they score? I'm confused by what just happened. That was sort of his vibe for the whole game. I was pretty surprised by how bad he looked, basically. Joe, I'm guessing you were less surprised by that.
Yeah, less surprised. I'm just still waiting for someone to tell me what Joe Scally is good at. Like, I don't see it. Like, I've never seen it. I understand he plays for Gladbach, which is a good level, and it does sort of establish him as a solid professional soccer player, which he is, but I don't see him excelling in any area, right? He's not useful, really, on the overlap. He's not this super dynamic, productive attacking fullback that's never been his game. And he hasn't been especially good defensively for the U.S. And he was put in a difficult spot. Let's be clear on that opening goal for Jamaica. It's Gregory Lee scoring in the first minute, 31 seconds in. I walked through some of the early build-up there earlier in the show where it's a kickoff, long ball, out of bounds on Jenna Robinson, throw-in on that right side. Already on the throw-in, Jamaica are taking their sweet time, by the way, 30 seconds into this game. They're not in any huge rush. The throw-in does come. Jenna Robinson can't take the ball from Bobby Reed on that right side for Jamaica, left side for the U.S., and Bobby Reed puts a cross in, and Joe Scally has two people that he's trying to figure out exactly what to do with. He's got Cephas in a more central area, and then Lee, you know, crashing at the back post, and he makes the wrong choice. Like, he really starts to move after the cross has been hit, so he has a little bit of information to make the right choice, and he doesn't. He takes a step towards the center where Cephas is, realizes, oh crap, that's not where the ball was going, tries to duck back to the back post. At that point, the damage is done, and it's a headed finish from Gregory Lee, and the U.S. is 1-0 down. Like, Scally just wasn't sharp in that moment. He wasn't sharp on the ball. And he's just never been. Like, he's just never been that guy for the U.S. That is my biggest concern for the U.S. team. I wrote this after the November window and people got all angry at me, and I still don't really understand why. I wrote that the U.S.'s biggest problem right now is their depth. The more I think about this performance, Taylor, and the more that we talk about it, and I want to hear your thoughts on Scally and that goal in a second. The more I think about this performance, the more I think, yeah, this was really bad. And it was. Like, it ended well, and we had fun in the first segment, and there were fun parts of this game. I still can't believe that the U.S. scored on the last kick of regulation. It was a cool moment. This was a really awful performance for most of the game. I think the U.S. would have been completely fine and probably sailed to a 2-0 win if Serginho Dest had been on the field for Joe Scally, if Tyler Adams had been on the field for Yunus Musa, if Giorena had been on the field for Malik Tillman. I think this game looks so different when you have an actual ball mover, someone who's at least going to give you some safety net in possession in Tyler Adams, even though he's not flashy. He's going to give you aggressive defending. Giorena is going to pull the strings. And you at Serginho Dest combining with Tim Weah to the point where Jamaica are never really getting on the ball because the U.S. is that much sharper with it when they have it. I think if those three players are in the lineup for the U.S. from the start, this game looks so different. And the fact that they weren't and the U.S. struggled this much is yet another indictment of what plagued the U.S. at the World Cup, which was their lack of depth. Back in 2022, what we saw against Germany, which is when Giorena came off the field last fall, after 45 minutes, the U.S.'s attack dropped off a cliff, and they couldn't defend in that game without Tyler Adams. It brings me back to what we saw in the home leg against Trinidad and Tobago back in November, where the U.S. was listless and really struggled to find good moments, or at the very least, they left it a little too late in that game before they finally got on the board. Like, this is the theme. When the big guns aren't available and aren't fit and aren't in the lineup, the U.S. look rough. Sometimes even when those players are in the lineup, they still look rough. But like, I think that is the biggest issue facing Greg Berhalter, frankly, and this entire USMNT program, is that when the first 11, you know, whatever that looks like, but it certainly includes Giorena, it certainly includes Dest, and it probably includes Tyler Adams, even though there are other promising central midfielders, like, those guys are in this 11. And when they're not, like tonight, there are real problems.
All right, let me ask you this then. Hindsight being what it is, if that is the case, the depth is the issue, and I agree that it is.
Or at least, in my opinion, I think it is the largest issue for the U.S. There are other issues as well.
Fair. Would you have rather seen the United States basically, or Greg Berhalter, say, we don't have Serginho Dest, no one can do what he does. So, we're going back three. And Tim Ream's going to come in, we're going to put whomever at right wing back, Tim Weah, Weston McKennie, whatever. We're going to use Jedi Robinson as a left wing back, and we're going to basically change things up stylistically because we cannot attack that way that we want to. So we're going to do something different and try to make something happen that way. Like, would you rather see the U.S. have a sort of very different backup look, like it, when they don't have certain players there? Or do you think it is still smarter, better, wiser as we build towards 2026 to stick with the same shape, the same approach, and see who can best deputize in those spots?
Yes and no. No, because I don't think against this Jamaica team, you can have a super different backup approach. Like, you can have a different formation, but Jamaica, you know, I was wrong earlier. It was 80-something percent possession in the first half and 80-something percent possession in the second half, not 70%. Like, Jamaica were always going to give the U.S. the ball. So even if that first goal doesn't come in, it's not like the U.S. can say, hey, guys, like, come out and play, and then we'll go and attack and transition. Jamaica just don't let that happen. Like, that was never a possibility for the U.S. in this game. And I think it is still more useful for the U.S. to try and figure out how to break teams down. So I guess no in that way. But yes, in that, more so than Dest, I thought we kind of already had enough data on Musa as the deepest midfielder to be pretty confident that at least now, when he's 21 years old, plenty of time for things to grow and change, that at least now he's just not very good at doing that job. You know, so that for me, go to a back three, maybe. You have more of the distribution from the outside center backs. You have maybe Robinson in the middle and Richards on the right or Tim Ream on the left. So you get those outside center backs who can distribute, although Richards didn't do that with a lot of grace tonight. And then that way it takes some of the burden off of the single pivot, and you go to a double pivot, and then you go 3-4-3 and do some of the things that you talked about. So in that way, yes, I would have liked to see a different look. And it seems to me that one of the bigger issues that Greg Berhalter's had is that he has generally been too slow to make changes, both on the personnel side. We saw way too much Jackson Ewell for way too long, and probably on the shape side of like trying just something a little different to breathe some life into this team.
I swear that there was a period of time when we thought Yunus Musa could be the Tyler Adams replacement.
Yes, I'll hold my head up and say, like, I thought Yunus Musa on paper, and I still kind of think he's a decent fit for that role. His passing just hasn't improved at all from when he was 18 or whatever he was breaking in for the U.S. of this first game against Wales back in 2020 in the fall of that year, where he comes on and is so bright, so press resistant, so good on the dribble, so physical. Like, he was a breath of fresh air for this U.S. team and still is in a lot of ways, even though tonight was poor from him. Like, he just hasn't grown to become that player, and I thought he could be, and he has not been.
That makes sense. Joe, also going back and looking at the USA Trinidad game, the second leg of the Nations League, I have in my notes there, Joe got ratioed for saying the U.S. isn't deep enough. So there you go, Joe.
Which is bizarre.
Evidence.
Like, how is that a bad... I don't understand. Like, that is like the most that is a tepid take, truly. Like, oh, great, bringing Christian Roldan and Jordan Moore. I don't honestly remember who came off the bench of the World Cup. But like, bringing these guys off the bench of the World Cup, you feel good about that? Like, you feel good about Kevin Paredes starting against Trinidad and Tobago and doing nothing for 90 minutes back in... Like, get out of here, man. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Angry Joe isn't a Joe that I knew I needed, but it is. I appreciate Joe being flummoxed and flabbergasted simultaneously. A few more notes on some individual performers. You alluded to it, Joe, in the goal for Jamaica. Joe Scally definitely gets posterized. They talked at halftime a little bit about how Matt Turner should be saving that, could be saving that, whatever it is. I think that's pretty harsh. I think he has to get across. I think by the time he is diving, he has to sort of dive backwards to be able to get to that ball. So he's basically already going into his own goal. Even if he's able to keep that out, I think he's pushing it right back into play where it's maybe going to be put in. But he does end up sort of doing his best to push it out. He just pushes it into the top of the net because that's how far back he is at that point. So I will do the Matt Turner apologizing for you there.
Thank you,
I also enjoyed the Discord noticed this. Joe, did you notice that he does like the free throw follow through when he does long goal kicks? He does it so rarely that I hadn't noticed it, but every time he kicked the ball long, he like left the hand up in the air as though he was like making sure his goal kick was going to swish, and sometimes it did.
He's just a multi-sport athlete, Taylor. Like, what can't this guy do? He can hit dingers in St. Louis, and he can hit free throws, apparently.
I believe Chris Whitty mentioned that he could throw like Dak because he threw the ball 50 yards at one point.
Yeah.
So there you go. You got all the sports covered.
Let's
but
go.
For that goal, Scally gets posterized. I don't blame Turner. I do point a finger at Tim Weah, a pretty big finger at Tim Weah, because he is supposed to be marking here. He is supposed to be helping out there. As you said, Joe, it's basically Scally on Cephas, and to my mind, it's Weah on Lee as the throw-in is taken. when Jedi seems like he is going to control the ball or at least clear it, Leia sort of takes a step out because I think he thinks the counter is coming. When he realizes, oh, the counter is not coming, Jedi has missed this, he sort of naturally starts drifting towards the ball, towards the middle of the pitch, but never looks back to see where Wright is. And I think Scally, maybe it's a decoy run from Cephas, maybe it's just him trying to get into a better position, but Scally definitely follows that. Maybe a more experienced defender looks behind him, recognizes someone is wide open, and immediately screams at somebody else to cover or come and help. But I think Scally is left out to dry a little bit there, and I think Tim Weah certainly doesn't help. I do still think at the end of that, a more veteran defender, this might seem counterintuitive, turns around and screams at Tim Weah there and lets him know, like, yo, what's going on, man? And as I said before, that Scally just sort of looks around like, what just happened? Pretty clearly communicates that he did not know what was happening. But I do think Tim Weah gets a little blame in my mind for that goal. Weah, who was okay on the night, I did not think this was Tim Weah's best game. It felt like this was not a performance where he was maybe put into positions where his skill set is particularly utilized. And as we talked about, I think him roaming around trying to get on the ball sometimes helps create, sometimes helps link play. But overall, I didn't think it was an A-plus sort of game from Tim Weah.
I don't think it was either. With that being said, I still thought he was one of the better U.S. players on the field. Like for me, McKennie and Balogun didn't have a huge impact. Pulisic had a bigger impact than those two, and probably more impactful on the night than Tim Weah. But like then you work your way back, and it feels like things kind of got worse each line after the next in terms of their impact, at least going forward. So Weah, man, he's the only player on the field at times that I feel like is willing to try stuff. Like he's got that Dempsey streak in him where, you know, we can't find a way through. Tim Weah is going to try to touch the ball around somebody and like race around the other side to pick it up in the box, which he's tried in this game. He's going to go try to nutmeg someone. He's going to go try to drift and create an overload somewhere else. And I just think that it's such a valuable skill for Tim Weah that it seems like no other U.S. player, maybe outside of Gio Reyna, is interested in displaying. But I don't think he covers himself in glory defensively on that opening goal. With that being said, also, if you're box marking scheme is dependent on Tim Weah like really coming in and putting in a shift, something's gone wrong. Like something deeper has gone wrong. And so everything you said, Taylor, I think can be spot on while still recognizing that the U.S. in general just didn't seem like they were prepared for that moment and certainly didn't execute well with whatever level of preparation they had. But I thought Weah in general was solid. I just also have a soft spot for him, so maybe there's a tiny bit of bias in there coming from me as well.
We've been accused of being not the biggest fans of Christian Pulisic because we often don't talk about him. And when we do, I think it's with an air of criticism. I do want to spend a second on him for a moment, Joe, because that's another performance that I'm a bit confused by. At times, it felt like he was there to be in isolation. Like the U.S. has a strange possession shape for large chunks of this game that I would say was basically a like 3-1-3-3 with... This is where it gets weirder. Your back three would be Miles Robinson, Chris Richards, and Weston McKennie. Then the one would be Yunus Musah. Then the three of ahead of him would be Joe Scally, Malik Tillman, and Jedi Robinson. And then the front three would be Tim Weah, Florian Balogun, and Christian Pulisic. With Pulisic very, very wide on the left. I did a lot of legwork there to not say trying to do the Vinicius Jr. thing because that feels like an impossible task. But basically, it felt like he was there to be in isolation, to be the threat that maybe Jamaica would overload, or if they didn't, that could then be capitalized upon. And I think there were moments when he takes people on, when he's trying to make things happen. I think as the game goes on, it is both a credit to Pulisic, but also a drawback in my mind that he starts to try to do maybe too much. I think he feels like the pressure is on him to make something happen. He feels the desperation to score a goal, to go on that run, to draw a penalty, whatever it is. And I think he is part of why it felt to me like the U.S. weren't going to score, while at the same time delivering some good set pieces as the game goes on. But it did feel like he was just trying to make things individually happen, I think largely because he felt like nobody else was going to. But I think that's what made Gio Reyna's performance stand out all the more, is that there are moments when he has those sort of dribbles and moments of skill, but then also with Reyna, there are moments of simplicity and then little lifted passes, little simple square passes, but then obviously those through balls and those really clever, incisive moments that I think made the difference. So I thought it was, an okay performance from Christian Pulisic, but I struggle, and I check my notes, like I struggle to really find the moments that separated him on the night.
I think he was mostly good.
Okay.
But I think, Taylor, some of the issues here that you're bringing up are correct, first of all. And second of all, are almost always going to come up with Christian Pulisic in a game like this. Christian Pulisic has always been at his best when the game is open, when he can go out there and attack in the open field, where he can crash the box on the weak side, where he can drive forward in transition. And weirdly, in this game, the maybe the best transition moment the U.S. had, at least in regulation, was in the 21st minute. It's that 3v1 break that the U.S. get, I think, after Malik Tillman wins the ball, which Tillman's work rate defensively, very good, and is a good starting point for him to be a productive player, even if the rest of his game isn't all the way there. But it's a good break. Balogun, I'd have to go back and rewatch one more time. Maybe there's more Balogun could have done there to draw the defender before he plays it to Pulisic. But Pulisic just takes too long, and it's like, man, those are kind of the moments where
it's a little underhit. It's a little underhit.
I think it is too. I think you're right about that, Taylor, now that you mention it. But Pulisic, he just takes one touch too many, and it felt like maybe it was that kind of night for him. But it's also just that kind of game for him. He's not the through ball threader. Like that's just not his thing. He is going to go at players 1v1. He's going to try to knife in behind, and there just wasn't a lot of space for him to do that. There weren't a lot of opportunities for him to do that stuff. So in general, I was mostly encouraged because I thought the set piece stuff was legitimately notable. I know he's done some of that for Milan this year, but at the World Cup and in the past, Pulisic set pieces for the U.S., crazy bad, like crazy yeah. bad. The U.S. now has a set piece coach who was set piece coaching for Italy at the Euros when they won. That is maybe something to take note of. I don't know. That's something that he's worked with Christian Pulisic on. Gianni Vio is the Italian's name, a former banker in Italy, and is a set piece coach for the U.S. men's national team. Like that was encouraging, and I thought he was one of the brighter players on the field for the U.S., but also that was a low bar.
It was, but I think given the set piece delivery we've seen from him in past iterations of this team, I was pretty heartened by that. There's the one, not including the one that they score off of, but there's the one that Miles Robinson heads just wide in extra time that it is such good delivery because it's low, it is outswinging, but it's hit with speed. It just sort of arrives at the exact perfect spot. Miles Robinson makes a great run. I would argue could have done better there with that header. Not should have, but could have. But that is still a nice moment from Pulisic. I did think that his set piece delivery was better. So, Joe, I'm glad that you're slightly more positive on him than I. The other player that we mentioned in there briefly that we should spend some time on is Weston McKennie. Because I was a little confused by him, not going to lie. I mentioned that positioning. He seems very quick to drop in and be that sort of like the left-sided half-space player between Miles Robinson and Jedi Robinson. And I don't hate that when it seems to be working. When it doesn't, it starts to feel like that age-old thing of Michael Bradley dropping between the two center backs to get on the ball, but now we've taken a midfielder out of things. And now there's an even bigger amount of space for Yunus Musa to have to process in while Weston McKennie plays deeper. It's clearly a thing that he is being told to do. At least I tend to believe that when a player does a thing over and over and over again in situations like that, that it's a thing that he's been asked to do. I don't know if it gets the best out of him. I don't know if it allows him to do the sort of Weston McKennie things I love to see. And as the game goes on, when he is in more advanced positions, when he is getting on the ball and having license to attack, that's when we do see some of those runs. That's where we do see some of those quick combinations from him and a few attacking opportunities results as a result. Like, I think it's another one where I come away being very happy that Weston McKennie is in this team, recognizing, to your point, that he is an ideal starter in that midfield three, but also being a little bit confused by his usage.
Yep, I think that's all perfectly fair. I think it makes sense in a lot of respects to have McKennie drop a little bit deeper because he is one of the better long passers in this pool. He's also one of the better box crashers, though. So, you know, you almost have to give up something to get something. I guess that's true in any moment. But I don't mind all of that. I just don't think McKennie was especially notable in this game, to be honest. Like, he gets shunted out to right back in the second half because Joe Scally was just that poor. And in the first half, I thought he had equal bad moments and good moments, turnovers and useful, you know, progressive play on the left side. The thing I like about McKennie is kind of along with Weah, he will try some things, not as often as Weah, but he had some flicks on that left side where the U.S. are trying to build forward. I have one in the 10th minute where he has a really nice, like, kind of no-look play to release the left side for the U.S., and I think that maybe frees up Jedi down the left. I don't have the rest of that play detailed, but there were some of those things that were nice. But on the whole, McKennie just wasn't super influential, and there are going to be those games, and tonight was one of them.
All right, Joe, let me ask you this. So the U.S. is in a group for Copa America with Uruguay, Panama, Bolivia.
Bolivia, yep.
So let's say against Panama, this might be a bad way of putting it. Let's say against Bolivia. So then we're going to go up against Panama. Against Bolivia, Dest gets a red card. So we need someone to fill in at right back against Panama. Do you feel comfortable, if that situation arises, with Weston McKennie starting at right back for an entire 90 minutes?
I feel fine about that. I would honestly rather Tim Weah start at right back and you do some cool possession rotations to make sure he gets high enough to be involved in the attack as well. Maybe that's adding another center back on the field. Maybe that's just being thoughtful in how you set up your possession scheme. But if Weston McKennie's in that spot, it's fine. Because I think at that point, Yunus Musah is probably not the six. It's either Johnny Cardoso, who I don't think is a great soccer player, but I think is better at that than Musah. Or Tyler Adams, hopefully, is back in 90 minutes fit by then. And you have Musah and Gio and Adams in that midfield, and McKennie's still in the field. And I think you're pretty okay with that.
So do you think that's a thing that we can then take away from this game? That if it's not going to be Joe Scally, if we have questions about him being at the level we need to be that sort of attacking outlet, that overlapping fullback, do you feel at least a little bit better that maybe it's Weston McKennie?
Probably a little bit. Not a ton, because I probably would have, if push came to shove, felt okay about McKennie doing that job anyway. Like, McKennie can play legitimately. I think he can play anywhere on the field. I don't think he can be effective everywhere, but can he deputize it right back for 90 minutes in a must-win game? Totally. And I would have believed that before tonight, and I don't think we should be dissuaded from that.
But if the goal is, agreed, if the goal is that we are solving problems, answering questions as we build towards Copa America in the short term, 2026 in the long term, and if one of those problems is if Dest can't go, who can do the most Dest-like job? I guess what I'm saying is, if that is going to be Weston McKennie,
right,
I'm not fully comfortable with that.
No,
but well, I guess in a way that's something we've learned, which is somewhat positive.
It's just not an ideal situation, right? Like, you don't want to take who is probably still your best and most consistent midfielder, and he probably was that tonight before Tyler Adams came on. Understanding that I just said he wasn't that impactful, but that tells you where the rest of the players were. Like, you don't want to take that player out of midfield and put him at right back. That's just not ideal. I would so much rather, and I'm a bit bummed that we haven't seen this tried yet, but I also know there aren't a lot of games to do it. I would so much rather see Tim Weah there. Like, he's literally played right back before in a four. He's played right wing back in a five. He's played right winger for the U.S. in a front three. I would just like to see him start to own that right side. It feels like it would be a really natural fit in a lot of ways. Maybe not all of them, but I would rather shift Weah, slide an extra attacker on the field somewhere. You know, maybe you're going with a two forward front because the U.S. has forwards who are putting the ball in the back of the net right now, and you go about it that way. But I guess I'm not really sure, Taylor, what to tell you on the McKennie thing.
All right, that's fine. I don't think you need to be. One other player I wanted to talk about briefly before we go is Haji Wright.
Yeah.
You talked about the week he is having, not being in Dubai, but instead scoring goals. And with Balogun not having the most impactful of evenings, Ricardo Pepi the same, Haji Wright is one who I think you had included in your squad because he could play out wide, because he could play it through the middle. We see him included here. We see him have that impact and get those goals. He does have a couple moments where he isn't as sharp. He has his very first shot he gets from a tight angle, don't get me wrong, but he still kind of scuffs it wide. It doesn't really feel like that threatening of an opportunity because of the way he hits it. And that is a moment where I put in my notes, like, that similar to Tillman, like, having the chance for PSV in the Champions League against Dortmund in the first leg, and sort of you just want to see him at the top of the box. If he scores that goal, I feel like, okay, that's my guy. I feel very comfortable with Tillman starting for the U.S., being in an attacking position when we need something to happen. And Haji Wright the same. When he doesn't hit that chance, I feel a little bit like, man, I wish we just had some clinical finishing. I wish we had the ability to just put that away. But then he ends up scoring two more goals. And so at the end of the day, I come away thinking, I'm pretty okay with Haji Wright continuing to be in this squad. Joe, are you similarly minded, or are you even more positive than that?
I like Haji Wright's versatility. He comes on the field and he's playing as the left winger for the United States. And then when Brendan Aaronson comes on the field a bit later on in the second half, you can hear Aaronson yell to Haji, hey, we're going two strikers, like two strikers tuck inside. And then it is a little bit more of a 4-4-2. It's janky. It's weird. The U.S. are desperate at that point looking for a goal. And so shape is secondary to just getting people in the box. But I like that about Haji, right? He's been effective for Coventry in the Championship and in the FA Cup, scoring in the 100th minute to send them through to the semifinals of the FA Cup over the weekend, and now scoring two goals to get the U.S. through to the CONCACAF Nations League final. It has been a great week for Haji Wright, assuming he didn't actually want to go on vacation. Like, I like that versatility from him. Taylor, I want to ask you a question. Because I recognize that I am generally more Florin Balogun forward than probably most of the population. Who do you start at striker against what looks like it's going to be Mexico? Listeners will already know, but Mexico have an early lead against Panama. Yeah. Who do you start at striker on Sunday?
Balogun, I think.
Okay. And why? Explain.
I do think that is more likely to be a more open game. And I think similar to what you were saying with Pulisic, I think that might benefit Balogun more. I think back to goal, having to sort of get the ball further away from the goal or even when he gets it closer to goal with four and five players around him or behind him, I think it's not going to put him in a position to shine. That said, the time that he does get the ball in the open is that moment in transition when I would say he underhits the pass. So who knows? But I think against Mexico, there's more opportunity for him to be the sort of threatening, darting in behind attacker. I think there's also more opportunities for him to be the creative chance creator attacker. And I think there are opportunities for him to just score a goal. And so I think I still lean Balogun. It's one of those scenarios where if it were someone else, I'm not fully upset, but I think I would still have it be Balogun for the time being.
I agree with all of your reasoning there, Taylor. I think it's fair if Berhalter decides to go in another direction. Mm. Like, Pepe's been productive. Haji Wright's now been productive. There are players breathing down Florin Balogun's neck. It's also just inarguable that Haji Wright gets the better end of the stick tonight in terms of the players that are surrounding him. One player played more with Giarena. Balogun played 28 minutes. Haji Wright played way more than that with Giarena tonight. That's a huge difference-making factor. Like, on the whole, I did the math before we started recording. Balogun and Giarena have played 370 minutes together. They've had some very productive minutes together. I think about the last Nations League Final Four. Balogun gets on the score sheet. Giarena is productive. He's threading him through. It looks a lot like it did tonight, frankly, with Giarena and Haji Wright. Gio is the common denominator. Like, for a lot of these guys, who is having success? Which of these nines are having success? Well, you know, looking at who's played with Giarena and where Giarena is on the field and if he's on the field at all, like, that is a big part of this. I think I mentioned it earlier. Balogun's just played one 90-minute stretch with Giarena. He's only played two games that have included more than a 45-minute stretch with Giarena. Like, we're just still so early on in this process, and I still believe that Balogun is the most talented number nine in the pool. I think game state, I think coming out against a tired defense, I think playing with Giarena for longer, all of those things probably sway the actual box score stats in Haji Wright's favor. Yeah. But I would probably continue to go with Balogun and hope that maybe you get to start Giarena on Sunday instead of bringing him off the bench.
So if we want to end on a full positive, as you said, it seems like it will be USA-Mexico in the final. Mexico,
which is great. Sorry, Panama, but I'm excited about that.
Me too. And you could be forgiven for being apprehensive about that given the way this evening played out for the U.S. Here's what I would say. I think there's a pretty strong possibility that we see a very strong lineup for the United States. I think we'll see Serginho Dest back, obviously. I think we get Dest and Jedi as your two fullbacks. I think it's another opportunity to have Chris Richards and Miles Robinson start and ideally look a little bit more solid. I think we'll certainly see Matt Turner. I think it will be the exact same front three, maybe a little bit of experimentation in there, but my guess would be it's Pulisic, it's Balogun, and it's Weah. But I think that midfield is very likely to be Giarena, Weston McKennie, and Tyler Adams. And I think that is how Greg Berhalter was able to immediately calm Tyler Adams down. Maybe I am fully wrong here. Maybe it will be somebody else. Maybe Adams is truly a like 30 to 40 minute player over like in one game and in the next. But I have a feeling that they are meant to manage his minutes such that if they want to play him for the first 60 minutes of Mexico, they had to make that substitution. And I really do believe that that is part of what Berhalter said to him was, we need you for the final if we can make that final. And it is when it feels like things are more in control that he comes off. So I think there's a good chance that we see Adams, Weston McKennie, and Giarena with Dest back in that lineup. everybody just has another rep. Everybody feels a little bit more confident against Mexico. I think the U.S. can play more of the game that they want to play. And so I think that does have me feeling more optimistic overall for that final.
I would agree. I'm not all the way with you on the Adams theory. I want it to be true. I just don't know. I think Giorena and Dest will absolutely start. And that, even forgetting who's going to start at the six, even if it is Musa again, for as bad as he was tonight, and he was real bad, like I still feel a lot better about the U.S.'s chances, even recognizing that Mexico is a more dangerous opponent than Jamaica. I don't think it's a gimme. Like, the U.S. still isn't at the point where you feel super confident about them in really any game. But I think there are parts of this match, especially when it comes to the personnel, and if you get better players in that 11, if they're ready, and Dest certainly will be, if you get those guys in the 11, I just don't think that you have this kind of performance, or at least your chances of having another one of these duds goes down by so much.
Final question then, I think, Joe. If it cannot be Tyler Adams, who are you starting as the other midfielder?
If Johnny Cardoso's fit, I'm starting Johnny Cardoso. If he's not, I am probably going more of a pure double pivot. Like, we saw glimpses of it in this game, but I'm going to tell Weston McKennie, like, hey, dude, you're helping out. Like, sorry, I know you want to go forward, or I know you want to range to the side. You and Musa are going to handle that middle area.
Yeah.
Giorena is going to be a pure number 10, and we're going to defend in a 4-4-2 and go at it that way. Or you're shifting to a back three. I don't know that the final against Mexico is maybe the time to do that, but I'm not sure I hate that idea either.
I think it's really interesting no matter what, because if it is Yunus Musa starting with Weston McKennie, we assume then that that's Tyler Adams not being fully fit or able to go. But that does sort of tell me that it's Greg Berhalter backing his guy and wanting to see him respond from a poor performance, wanting to see what he does with a little bit of adjustment around him. If it's not Yunus Musa, then I also think that's interesting because it's Berhalter showing a willingness to make changes. But either way, it could go poorly. Either way, it could go well. Either way, I think it makes for a very captivating final, which Joe and I will be back to discuss. I'm not going to lie, Joe. I was not excited to have to talk about a third place game. I'm not sure I would have been able to do so. So instead, I'm very happy that we get a U.S. final and very likely a USA-Mexico final. We will be back probably Sunday evening, maybe Monday morning, but more likely Sunday evening to review that one, which will hopefully be another dos a cero and a better overall performance. Joe Lowry, anything else to add from this game or to preview that game?
No, just that contractually, I'm not allowed to talk about third place games. That's Graham's
that a boy.
Thing.
That a boy.
So it's really good that this game went how it did.
That's good stuff, Joe. Joe Lowry, thank you for staying up with me, even though I think it's still pretty early your time zone. But I appreciate it. This was fun. I feel better. I hope our listeners do, too. Congratulations to the United States. Congratulations to you, Joe.
Oh, thank you, Taylor. And to you as well,
good
sir. And to you.
You did it all. Thank you, my friend. Listeners, thanks again for listening. Go USA. We'll talk to you again Sunday.